This is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee.
Auto racing in America, a dynamic mix of technology, competition, and history. This year marks the beginning of the second century of American racing. The sport has always been immensely popular. The Vanderbilt Cup races in New York at the turn of the century drew gigantic crowds. As the new sport evolved, heroes emerged. The drivers, the human element inside the cockpits, the men who piloted the machine. 1911, a new racing facility in Indianapolis staged the ultimate test of man and technology, a 500-mile race. An automobile engineer for the Marmon Corporation, Ray Haroon, won the race in his company's car and was an instant hero to the large crowd. The Indianapolis 500 rapidly grew to become the premier event in American auto racing. The speeds increased. Enormous crowds came to see thrilling competition amongst drivers who grew to legendary status. A race driver's career, then as now, would be defined by his performance at Indianapolis. 100 years ago, America's first ever automobile race. The spectators followed the two racing cars on foot. Today, 33 drivers will pilot their race cars at speeds over 240 miles an hour in front of 500,000 people. A new face and name will be added to the old Silver Cup. A new champion of the greatest spectacle in racing, the Indianapolis 500.
It's May in Indianapolis. Time for the greatest spectacle in racing and the IndyCar Grand Prix coming up this weekend. Bonus IndyCar racing, not on the 2.5 mile oval, the road course race. Hello, welcome. It's Trackside, 107.5, 1070 The Fan. Downtown in Indianapolis at the MS Communications Studios, the drivehubler.com studios. I'm Kevin Lee. Kurt Cavan is here. David Deering, our studio producer. Courtesy of ABC from the 1995 Indianapolis 500, one of the classic Delta Force intros with the legendary Paul Page getting us kicked off here throughout the month. We'll get to the IndyCar Grand Prix later on in the week and all the details on that. I'll give you just some quick particulars before we get to it, and we do have a lot of things, so we're going to be tight on our commentary tonight, and we're going to stay focused and not weave off the path like I oftentimes do. So we're going to cover a lot of ground. It's really a two-day show this weekend. Now, Thursday, there is action on track, but it's Mazda Road to Indy, and the track isn't essentially open. You can always go out and watch from the south end, but the track officially is open at 7 a.m. on Friday. The first thing on track is USF 2000 qualifying, because they will have practiced and tested the day before at 8:05. IndyCar has a couple of sessions qualifying at 4:30, there's a lights race at 1:30. The USF 2000 and Pro Mazdas will race each day as well. Saturday gates at 7:30, and the IndyCar Grand Prix live here on the radio. 3 o'clock coverage, 3:30 on ABC, has a 3:50 green flag. One thing I also want to mention before I forget: for the following week, when Indy 500 practice begins on Tuesday, I mentioned that first day, it starts at 11 a.m. That's not just the first day. That's now the new normal. So while it's a day short, no Monday, really it's only a couple of hours less of track time, because now the hours Tuesday through Friday are 11 until 6. We'll get into that more next week. Kurt, we unfortunately have news on the 500 roster and entry list to get to because of occurrences from over the weekend. On, I think it was on Friday, in the season opener for the WEC sports cars, the cars that race at Le Mans, at Spa in Belgium. We wondered why Pietro Fittipaldi didn't do the rookie orientation. I didn't even know that they were racing this particular weekend. I hadn't paid attention to that, so it may have kind of served both. That may have been his travel day to get to Belgium, and they'd prefer just to prepare the car a little bit more, but unfortunately, Fittipaldi was involved in a pretty hard crash and suffered broken bones to both legs, broke his left leg and his right ankle, which he had surgery on. He's obviously out for the month of May, probably about 8 weeks. He would also miss the Texas race. So that's the next three races. He was scheduled to do both races in the 19 car in May and then the Oval at Texas, and maybe back for his next scheduled race after that at Mid-Ohio. So what kind of options does Dale Coyne have in a ride that now is very much sought after?
You're right.
Not just because it's an available ride, because it is a really good ride.
You know, one of the things, let's look at it a couple different ways. First of all, with 35 car and driver combinations announced for the Indy 500, pretty much there's a lot of quality people spoken for. So it does limit the pool somewhat. Now people would be quick to mention, as they should, that there are a lot of options still out there, and there are. I think you have to start by looking at who has had an association with Dale Coyne in the past, and be mindful that he's got to fill a seat for this weekend or withdraw the car, and he's going to have to fill an Indy 500 seat. That's the more preferred one, if you will, given how strong the Dale Coyne cars were last year at the Speedway. I think it comes down to a couple things. I'd be surprised if he doesn't run Zachary Clayman DeMello this weekend.
Agreed.
At Indy.
Agreed.
I mean, I think that's the easy one. Let's first back, I guess, go back even a step further. It depends on how that car is funded, given money was tied to Pietro. So I think that's one consideration.
Mm-hmm.
But as it comes to the 500, I think you're looking at two options. One involving a driver who has some funding behind him, and another involving a driver that Dale would pick if Dale were just outright choosing. And I think if Dale were outright choosing, he would choose Tristan Vautier. That would be my take on it. I think you'd have to consider Sebastian Saavedra, given that he has funding. However, there's that car's, got some Schmidt ties as well, which I don't know the depths of, but certainly has been involved. I think that's a strong possibility that you could see.
I'm sorry, the 19 car has Schmidt ties?
Saavedra and Peterson, I think, have some. At least I've been led to believe there's some association there. I don't know the extent
okay,
of
maybe.
It. So I think Saavedra is a possibility. I think Tristan Vautier is a possibility. And then, you could look at some other people. I would be surprised if it were a driver who has not competed in the 500 yet. Like, I don't see, for example, R.C. Enerson, even though he has driven with Dale Coyne, I don't see that being a viable option for the 500.
The only thing that doesn't limit that, if this is obviously a midweek crash, or even later, like what happened to Bourdais,
that's true,
then it has to be a veteran. In reality, if there is a rookie that they wanted to do a deal with, really, he's missed nothing at this point. He probably wasn't going to test this past week. Only about half of those that aren't full-time, that are one-offs, got the chance to do that. Now, three of the four true rookies did do that, and as we've talked about before, one advantage to the rookies this year was going to be that all of them had done a previous IndyCar race, including Pietro Fittipaldi, which I really, really like. I understand the circumstances of the economics that sometimes Indy has to be your first race, and there is ample time to get ready, but those are all considerations. What does Paysafe want? And that's what we don't understand, what the inner workings are with that deal. We believe that Pietro Fittipaldi has some backers of his own, but Paysafe has been on the car, and that's Zachary Clayman DeMello's backer. So there may have been a deal that said, all right, we're going to field this 19-year-old who we think very highly of, and the sponsor is going to be somewhat of a full-time sponsor. However, and this may have come from both sides, Clayman DeMello's side may have also said he doesn't really need to do Texas and the 500 and the big oval tracks right now. Let's kind of get his feet wet and do, I haven't looked at his schedule. I don't know if he's doing any ovals or just road and street courses, but I think the breakdown was 10 and 7 this year. So we're willing to help fund a little bit of the other driver in that car if you put us in the car for 10 races. So if that's the case, Paysafe could say, we're still in and we want you to go get the best driver that's available. And you make a call to Ryan Briscoe. You make a call to Townsend Bell. You This is a car that has a chance to win the race with PaySafe on the side. Let's do that. Now, the other side is it's probably a little bit of accommodation, like you said. My guess is that it does likely require some financial help, and that's where you get back to some of the other names. And I don't know if Vautier has any financial backing right now. I agree with you that he'd probably be the first choice.
I think he's the first choice if Dale's making the choice. That's where I'm going. And I, no disrespect to Briscoe, Montoya, Townsend, Bell, but Dale, I think Dale would like to hire his guy. And I think he...
Vautier drove their car last year at Texas.
Yeah, I think he really likes Tristan. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of us have a lot of respect, a lot of time for Tristan Vautier. That's just my hunch. I would probably look at least consider all the options, and maybe there's some others we haven't discussed. But I just don't think it will be a true rookie. I tend to agree with that. Given the things they've gone through, I don't think it'll be Clayman DeMello at Indy. I think it will be. I think it falls in the category of either somebody brings some money, i.e., Saavedra, or it's Tristan Vautier or another veteran that we haven't named.
And if you read Dale Coyne's quotes in David Malsher's story in motorsport.com, Dale was basically saying the same things that we are. Yeah, I'm not sure that Zachary Clayman DeMello is ready for this. I'm not sure that he's ready for Texas right now. So that does seem like it's more likely going to be someone else. Now, if it's a combination of someone that's driven the 500 and has some financial backing, which we think Sebastian Saavedra does, he would be my leader in the clubhouse right now. That seems like a plug-and-play type situation. Now, I'm not aware if maybe AFS, Gary Peterson's company, has already done some sort of a deal with Schmidt to be on a car. If that's the case, then that might preclude something like that happening. I'm not aware of that, but it's always possible that something like that is already in the works. Briscoe, I don't know if Ryan Briscoe would want to do it at this point. I have no idea. It's been probably since 15 when he replaced Hinch, since he drove an Indy car. Is that right?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, when he filled in for James Hinchcliffe and then did a few other races after that. And he would also have to get permission. And keep in mind, this is not an unemployed race car driver.
Sure.
Ryan Briscoe got one of the top paying factory rides that you can find. He's driving for Ford, and he's driving at Le Mans along with the IMSA WeatherTech Championship as well. So he would have to get permission from Ganassi and from Ford to be able to do something like that. Michaela Lotion's name has been mentioned, who's been in a car as recently as last year and is said to have some backing. I think you can cross off Juan Pablo Montoya. I've been asked about him, but Roger Penske is not going to allow him to drive for another team. You look at people who have driven in the last couple of years, like Jack Hawksworth, Matt Brabham, Alex Tagliani's probably been a couple of years before that. Juan Pedro Hita goes into that rookie category, but he was someone that was said to have some sponsorship available, or Santi Urrutia, who's driving in Indy Lights this year. I, too, would be surprised if it is a rookie at this point. You mentioned R.C. Enerson, who's driven for Coyne in the past. So I would put the list of most likely Saavedra, Tristan Vautier. I think they'll call Townsend Bell if they're allowed to hire. If it's just simply go hire someone, because remember the connection there would be Craig Hampson was his engineer at Andretti the year Townsend ran up front the entire time until the contact with Ryan Hunter-Reay on pit lane. Now, Hampson's not the engineer of the 19 car, but he's heavily involved in the program. I purposely did not ask Townsend if he has any interest, so I can just throw things against the wall. But my guess is no. My guess is that's not going to be. Townsend said he's not retired, but I just don't know that would be enough to change his mind. But I can't guarantee that, because if it would be enticing, because it is a full-time program. So the crew, they've been working on this car. They've been doing pit stops all season. It's quality engineering. It's a fast car. It is a car that is capable of winning the race. So
sure.
I feel for Townsend right now if he ultimately is asked if he is interested, because I think that will be a tough decision.
I agree. I think it's going to be a car. And secretly, I'm hoping, you know, I'm not rooting for particular people necessarily, but I'm hoping that they hire or secure a driver that's capable of running as strongly as the car.
Mm-hmm. And supporting Sebastian Bourdais as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, what we saw from, and maybe we're reading too much into it, but I've thought since the end of last year's May that both those cars were as fast as anybody's in the barn. So, yep. You know, you've got a chance, you know, to pull something special off here. And I hope, you know, we all know there are a lot of quality drivers in the IndyCar series, and the numbers bear that out on how many have won races and how many have won, you know, and been competitive and so forth. But the Indy 500 is a different deal, and there are fewer in that group of drivers who have won races. Not all those guys can win the Indy 500. I mean, let's, mm-hmm. you know, it takes something special with the number of pit stops and the number of adjustments you got to make and the positioning that Indy is, being in the right place,
the
right
patience
time.
Required.
There are, I'm not saying there's a limited number, but it's not as deep as that can win at St. Pete. It's not as deep. So in terms of just drivers to go do it, you know, so therefore, I mean, if you had a 33 car field at St. Pete, you would say more people could win St. Yeah. Pete. I know that sounds harsh to say, but you want a driver who can be up to the task.
You really feel for Pietro Fittipaldi, who's ready to realize a dream and drive at the 500. And, you know, I think we are all excited about Emerson Fittipaldi's grandson driving there. And I mentioned this last week, too. I have heard, one, I was impressed with just meeting and visiting with him. But that doesn't mean that you can drive the race car. It goes with other people that are familiar with him, that watched his race at Phoenix, that watched him in the test, that are hearing about his feedback, and they're impressed.
Yeah,
they thought he was someone, you know, I'm not going to say that a rookie was a contender to win the race, but maybe, you know, maybe at least have a good day, run up front, provide some good help to Sebastian Bourdais, and unfortunately he's going to have to wait. We'll see him back in the second half of the season, it sounds like, by Mid-Ohio. And by all accounts, Max Pappas tweeted out the report of where things are going. We've heard positive reports on his recovery, so we wish the best to Pietro Fittipaldi. Some things we want to finish up chatting about the test from last week. Since our last program, there was more testing on Wednesday, so what we learned about that. I want to talk about Danica Patrick just a little bit, and two stories. One about my conversation with her, and I almost had to pull out the quote sheet on her when she said I misquoted her, so we'll get to that. And then why she would be leery of the media if you saw some of the headlines about some of her comments about comparing IndyCar to NASCAR. I think she's got a legitimate beef. We'll get to that. We're going to talk about, we'll touch on this report on NASCAR's future and much more, all coming up trackside tonight. And Donald Davidson will be here at 8 o'clock for the Talk of Gasoline Alley on 107.5 and 1070 The Fan.
This is Elio Castroneves. You are listening to Trackside with Kirk Kevin and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Out of the final corner, the Acura Sports Car Challenge is won by Acura. Front row lockout, first and second. Ricky Taylor and Elio Castroneves will take the win.
Well, for Elio Castroneves, it is flag to flag. Elio, race winner in IMSA. How good does this feel?
Oh, my God. It's unbelievable. This is an incredible team effort. Acura Team Penske did a phenomenal job. I'm just so proud to be part of this organization. And, man, what a great battle. I mean, not only myself, but also obviously Dane and Juan Pablo and Ricky. Wow, what a job. Great job, Team Penske.
First of many wins to come. Congratulations.
I hope so. Thank you.
Good to have Elio Castroneves back in victory lane. Thanks for staying with us on Trackside. And Elio is going to be our Caldwell Realty Drive of the Day. Jennifer, one of the co-owners, suggested Elio last week, but he hadn't actually won anything. But we have an excuse to make Elio the drive of the day.
We didn't vote.
We didn't vote. I voted. I voted for Elio. It was really cool to start out the month of May with a win for Elio. This is a pretty significant win because it's Penske's first back in sports car racing, first since 2008. You know, they've got a big budget. I think some people were surprised that the Acura team hadn't really dominated. I think eventually they will, but they finished 1-2 in this race. I think this is Elio's first overall sports car win. Now, he won at Petit Le Mans back in 2008, but that was in an LMP2 car. And I looked it up today, and they did finish fourth overall, an LMP1 car, three of them, in fact, finished 1, 2, 3. So I think, and someone correct me if I'm wrong, this is Elio's first overall sports car win. Also significant, we like Ricky Taylor. He's been on the show a couple of times. First win for Team Penske. When you get that dream ride for Team Penske, and even though it's only three races in, the fourth race, and you haven't won, you're thinking, I'm in trouble. And he finished it off. Elio won the pole, started the race, pitted from the lead. They lost the lead on cold tires right out of that pit sequence, but Ricky Taylor eventually got back to the front and won over Juan Pablo Montoya, finishing in second position. By the way, with Caldwell Realty, when selling your home, they've got great options for you here now in the Indianapolis area. They have been in Northwest Indiana for many years, but have just opened up an office, especially in the Hamilton County region, north side of Indianapolis. And we invite you to call them at 317-361-2682 and visit with them and go for more information at CaldwellRealty.net. A special month of May offer, 4.75% commission rate throughout the month of May. So please visit our friends at Caldwell Realty, friend of the program, and that's friend right of Jackson Lee Racing as well, for all of your realty needs, and pass along the good word to your friends as well. All right, here's what's next on the docket. Back from the test from last week, 3 days of testing at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and maybe the number one positive out of this is nobody had a problem. Nobody had a problem. Nobody touched the wall. There's no damage. I think that's fantastic.
It is. It's first of all, I think it speaks to the idea that IndyCar did a nice thing in having the veterans go out and kind of figure the car out first. Mm-hmm. I think that was step one. So I don't think that's coincidental. But still, I mean, you're pushing it. We didn't see a lot of big pack running, I don't think, unless I missed it. We saw a lot of...
A little bit on Monday.
Just mostly guys.
Yeah, there was some traffic running. It was getting
traffic.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Not big packs, though.
Yeah. And I don't mean big pack like a pack race, but just big groups. We saw, and they look, you're just ultimately you're happy and lucky that nothing happened. But the thing I would take away, and I think we're going to get a Twitter question about it, but I want to make sure we got to this point. I didn't really hear any feedback from drivers that said something needed to change with the aero package, and I don't think anybody at IndyCar got that as well. I mean, this was truly a first chance to see this aero package at the Speedway, and for it to come away with basically crickets is a good thing. That
correct
bodes well as we move into a competitive month of May.
And they did run enough together to start to get a little bit of an idea. That's always the challenge
right
in testing, is that nobody runs together, but there was enough that I think they have a feel. Now, were they running nose to tail, 5-6 deep? Not really.
Right.
But I thought I saw 3 or 4 or 5 at time running very close together. And we saw some passing going into 1 and 3. So they're getting a feel of that. You know, the general comments, a lot of the drivers are saying, it seems fairly similar to last year. There are going to be differences, but it's not like it's relearning everything you've done here before.
That's right. And so I think we'll see a...
Which I think
similar,
is good for us. Similar racing.
Yeah, similar racing. And good for us. I think it'll be an exciting month, and I think you'll see a lot of talent, you know, very quickly. So that's good.
On Wednesday in the manufacturer test, which included cars and drivers from both manufacturers, really windy. And the times that were somewhat leaked out, they weren't that hard to find. I walked by the timing and scoring stand and looked at them at one point, and early in the day, Kanaan's was the fastest, 226.7 for a Chevy, and at that time, the next fastest was something like 221. Ultimately, Ed Carpenter was second quick at 225.4, then Gabby Chavez at 224.0, all Chevys. Wickens was the fastest, Honda 223.7. Now, I've heard some people either speculate, guesstimate, report. It's very possible that some of the top speeds had qualifying boost. That's been one theory out there, and that's what I wondered when Kanaan was 5.5 miles faster than everyone else. So I think that's a very likely possibility that makes sense. We want to try it out, make sure the car handles in that qualifying boost at some point as well. So I think that's a reasonable possibility too. Danica Patrick ran again with no incident on Wednesday. So I want to get to our conversation and something else I saw on Twitter from headlines that annoyed me just a little bit, and I understand why Danica is not very trusting at times of the media. So I talked with her with the big gaggle of people. We were hoping to get a one-on-one interview for NASCAR America. There were no one-on-ones, which is fine. I knew I would be able to ask two or three questions in a row, and they could play that if they wanted on NASCAR America on NBCSN. So, like, my second question was something along the lines of, you said yesterday in the press conference that you wanted to get the refresher done so you can get out and have fun again. Are you having fun yet? And she gave me the icy glare of, were those my words? I said I wanted to get yesterday over with so that I could get on with the job and get comfortable. So we went on, and then she gave a nice answer, and I asked a couple more questions. The interview was fine, and ultimately NBC cut out two or three of the things. They only used a couple. But I'm starting to wonder, well, where did I get that? I feel really bad if I, because I always think it's very unprofessional when reporters put words in other athletes and pass it along. You know, they misrepresent themselves or other athletes. So I went and started searching it up. Well, on IndyStar.com and in the transcript. So I thought, who was it? Jenna Fryer that did this from the Associated Press, waved the transcript at Kurt Busch or Kyle, one of them. I think it was Kurt a few years ago when he said, I didn't say that. So she showed him the quote. Here's the direct quote. I wanted to get through this so I can get to the fun part, which is really running, making changes. Maybe she just doesn't want to admit that she might have fun. I don't know. Very, very strange. But it was, that quote was widely distributed. So maybe this is just me wanting to make sure that I'm not a full idiot and I actually can listen and can read. Now, in Danica's defense, later that day, I see the headline from on Twitter from someone that I respect very much. I don't know Jeff Gluck, who we've talked about before, covers NASCAR, and he was retweeting a video link to that same scrum. Later on in the interview, Danica said some different things with the other reporters, and Dave First from RTV6 had the link up there, and Jeff Gluck put a little headline in front of it. Stock cars are, quote, way easier than an Indy car to drive, end quote. And that would sort of be, I think, the definition of clickbait. However, Jeff wasn't even encouraging you to click his website. It was clicking Dave First, so he had no financial incentive to do this, so he probably didn't mean much of it. And then I also would say, unfortunately, my company, NBC's website, had a similar headline, and I'm not sure who operates that, so they probably just saw that as well. And technically, that is what she said, but it made it sound like, and it really just stirred things up, oh, Danica's saying that NASCAR's easy, IndyCar's easier, then why didn't you ever win a race? Why did you only finish in the top 10 six times? No, what she was saying is that Indy cars don't have power steering and NASCAR does. She's just talking about an oval physically, and no one that's ever driven would dispute this. It's easier to turn the wheel. It's not necessarily easier to go fast and be faster than everyone else or win races. That's all she was saying. But it made it sound like she was banging on NASCAR. And I feel for athletes when that happens.
And that, friends, is the Danica Report provided by Kevin Lee. So I agree with you. Yeah. She, that was taken out of context, and you didn't take her out of context. She did say that she was ready to get to the fun of
now
it.
Now I see why she doesn't trust what I told her was correct. So there was no malice involved. She just didn't, because, hey, trust me, I know this. I say things all the time. And people say, well, you said this, and well, I don't think I did, or at least that's not what I meant to see. But oftentimes, that is actually what you said. We all think things through differently, and it doesn't always come out the right way. So that's where that comes from. Let's touch on this, and we can move on and get back to IndyCar. For those that haven't seen, this is pretty substantial industry news. Reuters reports that NASCAR is exploring a potential sale. The majority owners of NASCAR are exploring options that include the sale of a majority stake. They are working with Goldman Sachs Group to identify a potential deal. It says this is in the early stages, and a NASCAR spokesperson did not refute this at all, just said, we do not have anything to add. What do we make of this?
Well, I'm not really sure what to make of it. I'd be surprised if someone in the company wasn't always looking out for what the options are. Well, you know,
that would make sense. But normally, you know, when you enlist Goldman Sachs, it's getting out there.
Yeah. I don't have anything to add. It's surprising that that report came out. But I don't have anything to add. I'm sorry.
There have been whispers on this for a while. Adam Stern at Sports Business Journal wrote a big piece on this in February. And the example as to who might buy this, a lot of people are using the Formula One example. Media companies, Liberty Media, they're tired of paying a lot of money for rights fees. And we all know, I just saw a tweet today from a researcher at Fox that maybe I took a screenshot of this. But the numbers in the last few years of dramas on television are down like 53%, while live sports ratings are going up still, generally speaking. Up 27%, drama down 52%. That's in the last 10 years, 2007 to 2017. So sports, live sports, somewhat DVR-proof is what people are looking for, and some think that media companies could be interested when it's available. Purchasing a league, you're not really ever going to be able to buy the NBA or Major League Baseball or the NFL, but you can buy racing series or maybe a soccer league or something like that. And some people think that Comcast could be a bidder, the folks that own NBC. So we shall see on that, but it's an interesting story to follow as we move forward. We talked sports cars a little while earlier, and I wanted to mention this. You know, we think back that test this past week, when Danica tested, in fact, was exactly 1 year to the day when Fernando Alonso did his test. So the media looked up Fernando, and he, by the way, raced at that Spa race where Pietro Fittipaldi was injured in either practice or qualifying, and he won. It's looking really good for Alonso, by the way, to win Le Mans this year.
Yeah, it is.
Because there's just not competition in the LMP1 class. It looks like it's either going to be his Toyota or the Toyota that Mike Conway is driving. And I think Conway finished second in that particular race, but they are clearly the class right now. There are some privateer teams, but the Toyota is a heavy favorite. So he could very likely have two of the three Triple Crown, which I think is going to give him even more incentive to come back and do Indianapolis. And he told reporters in Belgium that he very much misses Indianapolis, follows every session. Sounds like he was watching our test over the last week. He said, I watch all the test sessions. I've been talking to the engineers and people over there about how the new aero kits are handling. And he wants to test again. He said, you know, I don't know. I'm pretty full this year. I can't drive. But he wants to test. So I'm putting the grand poobah of talking points to send that up the flagpole. You need to make that ask. You want to test? We've got a car ready for you.
You think this is my first rodeo?
I'm sure somebody read that last week and made that call as well. And here's what's going to happen. If he's in a Honda again and for Andretti, because there are whispers of this last year that, you know, this is unfair to Chevy and to the other teams because they're getting extra time. And sort of the answer was, well, he's new. How much is he really gaining? Well, there would be real louder arguments with someone experienced coming back and getting extra time. So here's what you do. You get a Honda and a Chevy. You put in both of those cars. And he's going to give you the best. He doesn't know who he's going to be racing with the next time he races.
Could be. I can tell you, by the way, that the streaming of the open tests, I can't remember the numbers specifically off the top of my head, but we'll call it this recent one, compared pretty favorably to last year when Alonso's test ran. It wasn't quite to the same level, but
good.
Certainly there was some carryover to the growth that we've seen in live streaming. So good for everybody.
I'm going to pull up the speed chart again and take a peek at that from the test, and really from Monday. That's what we have the most cars running. But Kanaan, I mentioned, probably in qualifying boost was fastest on Wednesday, but he was also fastest on Monday. What, if anything, might we have learned as far as from a competition standpoint from the testing that we saw last week?
Honestly, I wouldn't take anything. I'd like to think that the Foyt team was going to be right near the top of the chart, if not at the top, but it's too early. Conditions are going to be different. People will talk themselves out of setups, since others will discover setups. Too early.
I'm going to go somewhat the other direction. Ultimately, it is too early to read very much into it, but I think you are reading a little. I think you can read a little bit into it. And if I'm Foyt and Kanaan, I'm looking at this, one, considering the way it's gone the last few years, you're looking for something positive for the crew guys working on things. You need enthusiasm. Two, if you're fastest in two particular days, it may not mean you're going to be the fastest, the top five, but I think it probably does tell you, well, we're not going to be 28th, or we've got a good chance of not being 28th. We should at least be in the ballpark. We've got a real good chance with those things. And I just know that we always say don't read too much into it, but the people competing do read things into that. And maybe they shouldn't either, but whether it's a test in February in Phoenix, when it doesn't go well, at least the drivers, they really start to fret that, uh-oh, what's wrong right here? So,
yeah, but if a test at Phoenix, you're going to come back and have a limited number of hours left. They're going to be on the track
That's
7 hours, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then a lot of time on Saturday and Sunday. And by the way, none of that has anything to do with the race. So it's just, it's too early.
You'd rather be fast than not,
I'd rather be fast than not.
There you go.
And it certainly builds morale and confidence and, you know, just a spark when they come back.
And I think it matters more for those teams. I don't know that it matters for Team Penske. Pagenaud was second quick. Marco was third quick. I don't think it matters for them. I think it matters for Harding Racing and Gabby Chavez to be fourth. Dixon, Bourdais, Piggott, Jones, Carpenter, Castroneves was the top 10 from the full open test with the full-timers on Monday. All right, I know there are things that I want to get to that we have not discussed. We'll do that coming up in just a moment. And start looking at your tweets, too, at Kevin Lee 23. And then at 8 o'clock, it's Donald Davidson here on 107.5 and 1070 The Fan.
You're listening to Trackside with Kevin and Kevin on 1070 The Fan.
All right, other things I want to mention before we get to nostalgia and Donald Davidson at 8 o'clock for the talk of Gasoline Alley, and 8 o'clock is your cue to call in. We'll mention that again coming up in a moment. One more business item. This came out over the weekend or on Friday, that the Indianapolis 500 is looking for a new presenting sponsor starting next year. Sports Business Journal, I think, was the first to report this, and then eventually had quotes from Doug Bowles that Pengrade will be out. SBJ reports that IMS was receiving between $1 million and $1.5 million per year. Doug Bowles mentioned the benefit of working with NBC for this, as has been said to be the case for the title sponsor search, and something I hadn't thought of. They could potentially tie that together. One of the challenges of a presenting sponsor is how many times does anyone say Indianapolis 500 presented by Pengrade Motor Oil? And I'm probably guilty of that as well. You know, the people who are going to say it are people that are working on official broadcasts. So on the public address, on the radio broadcast, you don't get on the TV broadcast unless you pay extra. Generally, I think there may be a graphic. I think that's where you get in, the
graphic.
And that is the real value of that, is the graphic that you're going to be seen there with your logo. And Doug mentioned that too, that it's really critical that, you know, whoever you want to do, if you want to give them great value and really make it into something, they probably need to be willing to do the TV buy as well.
Yep.
And you could do a title sponsor. Think about this. While my first thought was, well, why would the title sponsor want to also present the Indianapolis 500? Well, on the graphic, I don't know that the title sponsor of the series is going to be seen on the screen very often. It's just going to be the Indianapolis 500 graphic when you talk about the leaderboard and coming in and out of breaks. So if it's Verizon, for example, and we mentioned this last week, SBJ reports that NBC is going back to Verizon and say, hey, the deal has changed since you made that decision. You're still interested? They have a lot of other deals with Verizon in the NFL and other sports on NBC, so you never know what could happen there. But there could be added value for whoever it is, Verizon or whoever, to be a presenting sponsor of the Indianapolis 500. Another scenario people have kicked around is, well, you could just go all the way and do the title sponsor and really ask for some significant money. If those numbers and reports are correct, that you're getting $1 million plus for a presenting sponsor, what might you get for a title sponsor, which comes at the front of it? That's a very debatable topic because, again, the reality is that people are just going to say the Indianapolis 500. It's going to take a few years, but it can happen. What do we call the NASCAR race in Charlotte? That's in May.
Coke 600.
What do most of us call it? Not Donald, because
He's got the World 600.
Would predate that era.
Coca-Cola 600.
Exactly. You know, people under 45 or 50 or whatever call it the Coca-Cola 600. So it can happen. Now, how long did that take to stick? I don't know the answer to that. You know, my lifetime, at least, I can only remember it. I know it was called the World 600, but I can only remember it being the Coca-Cola 600. Maybe it's been that for 20 years. Or something.
You know,
like
the Southern 500 is the other one that, you know, pretty much has been able to stick. Mm-hmm. It's still called to most people the Southern 500.
But that wasn't a title sponsor, though, right?
No, I'm just saying that
they've had a few. They've had Mountain Dew, Dodge,
yeah.
And all that.
Do they even
like
have
in the
Bojangles? Even
yeah,
that's right.
The Bojangles 500. Yeah.
That's right.
But we've pretty well stuck with the Southern 500.
Yeah, so that's interesting. We'll keep an eye out on that as things move forward on that front. All right, I touched on this last week, and now I've actually read the article. I had questions about some things that Racer was reporting, and I've had a chance to think about it, so I wanted to get into this just a little bit, although I couldn't find the story that was referenced about potential competing chassis manufacturers with the next generation of IndyCar. So maybe that's something that Marshall Pruitt said in an interview, or maybe it was in the mailbag or somewhere else, but I was unable to find that. But I think I've got a little sense of what they're talking about. And for those that didn't hear all of that, the next engine formula, according to Racer.com and Marshall Pruitt, is going to be in 2021. There was a scenario where it could have happened by 2020. If a third engine manufacturer was going to join in, and we've, I think, passed that deadline. We've talked about that it was coming very soon. The engine manufacturers would like to have at least 18 months and probably more like 2 years. So now we're to 2021. Not a lot is known about the details, Marshall writes, but it's expected to be a similar small displacement internal combustion engine with turbochargers providing the sole power. Hybrid is not a part of the plan. Likely twin turbo V6s with modifications likely to the current 2.2 liter capacity. And he writes that they are seeking to increase the horsepower above what is now a max of 750 horsepower on road and street courses to get to somewhere around 900. That's what I think would excite people the most. Now, as far as the next chassis, that could also be 2021. And this is what I wanted to discuss here. And this is something that IndyCar will be discussing internally, if they've not already discussed it and made a decision on this. So one theory would be break out the next car when you do the next engine. Maybe that works better, not needing to fit it into two different kinds of chassis. You don't have the next chassis to be virtually the same as far as the engine fit and the compatibility is concerned. But if that's not an issue, I wonder if an argument could be made, would it not be better to just give us something to talk about in the off seasons to spread those out to a different year? And one, you know, 2021, you will have only had 3 years of this common aero kit. So it's, yes, I know that the car has been around since 2012, but it's like we've had three cars
sure.
within this generation of car, which I think is a positive. We had something new to talk about with Chevy and Honda competing starting in 2015. Now we had something new here in 2018. So we would just be in year three, finishing up 3 years of this. Now maybe by year three, everyone is ready for something new to talk about. But if there is, for one, if there's a third engine manufacturer and you're competing on that level, that's something to talk about. And two, if it has even 75 to 100 more horsepower, that's a new beast.
I think I haven't been involved in any chassis discussions, but I think the drive to have the third manufacturer or fourth from the engine side is far more important to the overall health of the sport than having an extra car made by a company that you can't buy from anyway.
Correct, because they're not going to market the
series. There's no marketability yeah. for for that. I just think, you know, we've looked at this, and I look at it from a fan standpoint, whether it's a Dallara or a Panos or a G-Force or, you know, go down Riley and Scott and so forth, does it matter to me? You know, ultimately, I didn't know Panos before I got into racing. You know, I didn't know Dallara before I got into racing. Does that matter to me?
Does it grow the sport? And we just went through this conversation with the Aero Kid competition, right?
Right. I don't think it does at the current number of participants. I think you have to have more participants. If you had a 28-car field and you divided it two ways, then I think it's economically feasible. I still don't think anybody's going to be in. I just don't think there'll be enough people in line to know if, man, that Panos was better than that Dallara. You know what I mean? I think it's an interesting thing for those of us in the sport, but I think it's a better conversation if you're talking about Honda versus Chevy versus Toyota versus go down the manufacturer list. That's a much better fan engagement.
And they have the marketing muscle to boast about their wins, while a car manufacturer, meaning no disrespect to Dallara
or Swift or
Panos or Lola, you know, back in the day, they don't have that manufacturing arm. I think it'd be incredibly cool, and I'd love to see it, but the only way it should happen is if they can guarantee the price point isn't going to change, and that's what we heard the last time around, is, well, if we're not making all of them, then we're going to have to charge you more if we're only fielding 11 of the cars and teams compared to 22 of them. So that would be number one. And then number two, we just came off an era where we decide, well, we can't make them equal enough, and one is going to have a big advantage over the other. Anytime you do that, you run that risk of happen. And the third, I would say, is people love the look of this car. You know why they like the look of this car? Because IndyCar can make it look the way they wanted and not worry as much about the performance. Now, they did have to worry about the performance, but I think this is the way Jay Fry described it, that we engineered it backwards. That's maybe not the word he used, but we wanted to develop a car we liked the way it looked, and then we made sure it performed the way we wanted, and ultimately it did. But if you get into competing chassis, you're getting that fin back behind the cockpit, right? Because it's clear that fin is a performance advantage. They have it in Formula One. They have it in prototypes and sports cars. It's there for a reason, because you can build anything you want, and that makes the car go faster. And I suppose you could make rules that say it has to adhere to this, this, and this, but then you're going to get two cars that look exactly the same, so what's the point?
Yeah.
And you're going to get all of those winglets and everything that no one liked, because it makes the cars perform better.
Yeah, I don't want it misrepresented here. I think multiple manufacturers at every turn is a good thing, except tires. I don't believe tires is a good decision for a series to go down. I think single tire manufacturers is the safer choice.
Yep.
But in the current economics, in the current car count, those types of things, I just don't think it makes that much difference whether Dallara, Swift, Lola, under those, we're not buying any of those cars.
Yeah, I'm all for it, but I just wanted to point those out, that those are some of the types of reasons why you can't just sign up. Now, the engine thing, that's cool.
Game on.
And if you can get a third, and as you said, a fourth, because they're talking to multiples, and it's always possible that two of them raise their hand and say, sign me up, we're ready to go. That's a bit of a game changer type of thing. Before we get into opening up the phone lines, just one thing. I'll make fun of myself, and then a serious note about the weekend. I did get a lot of tweets when I declared my very late intentions on Friday afternoon to run a mini marathon. I had volunteers asking, well, when you don't make it in next week, can I host the show for you? So I am here. It went well, and I will now vouch for the no training training method. The key is to be fresh, and I actually did better than I normally did. I ran like the first 11 miles before I had to stop and stretch, and that's, as an old guy, better than I've done the last few years. I normally have to stop right after I climb that little bitty hill at 6 miles entering the speedway. That's tough on me. And I usually stop there, and then that trip down the backstretch is really tough. But, you know, and this is the serious part, why I didn't stop this year. They have something new this year called the Gold Mile, and it was on the backstretch of of the track, of the speedway, and it was recognizing the gold families, I think is what you would call them, but all the soldiers from Indiana that had given their lives protecting our country. And, you know, as you're slogging along there, you look over to your left and you see these pictures, and you see the ages and the faces of 18, 19, 20-year-old kids, some in their 30s, whatever. You're thinking, well, I kind of don't feel I can say I'm sore or tired at this point when you look at what the reality of this is. So I know a lot of people, that was pretty special for a lot of people, and I'm glad that those families were recognized and some of the families were out there as well. And that was really nice by the 500 Festival to do
that was good.
Down the back stretch of the Speedway. And also, huge thanks to all the volunteers. I thought about that too. There's thousands of people. They're not getting paid. They're out there supporting this event. This event means so much, not just the race, but everything that goes along with it. And there are so many people that just want to be involved and help out there for their community, because without the Indianapolis 500, I'm not sure what Indianapolis is. You know, I don't know that we have the Indianapolis Colts and the Indiana Pacers and the major corporations that we have. So kind of got off in the weeds again, but saved it for the end of the show.
What was your time?
2:14 something.
Okay.
I finished like 7,300th.
And by the
way, I beat 23,000 people.
And for all the radio listeners, he's wearing a Road America shirt that Donald should like. He looks like Bill Vukovich after he comes out of the car. It's got this soiled, oil stained look to him. So Kevin's very.
But it's really not soiled. It's clean.
Yeah, it doesn't look that way.
Yeah.
Very old school. So, Road America, you were done proud tonight.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. We're back tomorrow. We're going to be at Anders Krohn's event tomorrow for TheraPlay, and we'll talk about that tomorrow night. I'll explain in a moment. You're going to be relieved of duties tomorrow. Anders is going to be my co-host, and I'm going to have just a cavalcade of drivers they're going to be sitting in. So all the drivers are going to be there tomorrow in Carmel, so we'll talk to them tomorrow night on the show. Now, your cue to call in, 317-239-1070. The season debut of the Talk of Gasoline Alley with Donald Davidson is next.